AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.
I'm Tom Foti in Washington, where the Republican leader of the U.S. Senate, Mitch McConnell, has been hospitalized. Word of that came from a spokesman in late evening, but with very few details. Just that Senator McConnell was attending a private functions at a local hotel in Washington, and he tripped and fell. McConnell's 81. He took a serious spill about 3 years ago. He then suffered a shoulder fracture. In practical terms, it is little more than a suggestion that Congress will likely change big time, but President Biden today spells out his proposed federal spending priorities.
The White House says the president's budget will call for an increase in taxes on individuals making more than $400,000 a year to bolster the Medicare Trust Fund and reduce annual deficits by nearly $3 trillion over the next 10 years. The proposals will be dead on arrival in the GOP-controlled House, but the way the White House sees it,
the American people support what we're doing, and there is a choice to be made.
Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says the public in particular backs tax increases on the wealthy. Stephen Portnoy, CBS News, Washington.
About a month after that Ohio train derailment that still has residents of the East Palestine area much worried about air and water quality, the CEO of Norfolk Southern testifies today before a Senate committee. CBS News learns he will promise Congress his freight rail company is going to invest in more high-tech safety measures. Greg DeYoung is an associate professor of operations management at Southern Illinois University. He has doubts.
A lot of accidents that occur, and especially the worst ones, which involve passenger vehicles or pedestrians, those are happening at low speed, and all of these technological solutions aren't really going to help in that case.
It is a really old question. Can money buy happiness? Well, maybe, but these days it would take more than it used to. Correspondent Matt Piper.
New findings suggest that for most people, happiness does improve with higher earnings.
Money.
Earnings of up to $500,000 a year. That new number comes from a Nobel Prize-winning economist and fellow researchers. One of them did research on the topic back in 2010, and the study back then found money boosted happiness with $75,000 in annual earnings.
From Ukraine, word of another Russian missile barrage with at least five people reported killed.
Air raid warnings in 13 Ukrainian regions heralded yet another night of missile attack. Air defense systems were in operation before dawn in the capital, Kyiv. The governor of Kharkiv said a private residential building and critical infrastructure had been hit by about 15 strikes on the city and surrounding area.
Reporter Kat Wiener of the BBC. In Israel, protests intensify against a government plan to overhaul the independent judiciary. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual.
The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. More layoffs at 3M in Menominee. 53 workers were let go in January. Now the company is announcing another round of global job cuts. 3M blames lower demand for its products. 673 people worked for 3M in Menominee before the job cuts. Racine police say they've arrested Lucas Alonso for the murder of Linda Fields 23 years ago. There was DNA evidence at the time, but no matches in state or federal databases. Racine police say they found Alonso through a DNA match from his brother and father. In sports, Marquette beat St. John's in overtime in the Big East Tournament 72-70. The Golden Eagles take on the winner of UConn and Providence tomorrow night. The Bucks host Brooklyn tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Don't you deserve a job you love? Civic Media is preserving hometown radio, broadcasting from main streets across Wisconsin, and we're hiring radio advertising sales professionals to join our rapidly growing network of local radio stations. If you have a connection to your community, prior sales experience, and want to earn an outstanding living where you and your hard work is appreciated, you should apply right now. Find more information on our website, civicmedia.us. Click on the Careers tab.
Max Inc. Radio with Dennis Graham from Rockonson.
Appreciate all the support of Mad Radio 92.7. And by the way, a tip of the hat to Civic Media. That was a great article on the Cap Times by Paul Fanlon. You guys got a great model that you're growing around the state, local interest with radio stations throughout these different markets. And a tip of the hat, and you're focusing on local music, and nobody's doing it. So great job.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday night, 6 to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Hey, Joe, what do you got for us today?
In reference to Lindsey Graham, I was amazed at his comments where he said if Trump is indicted, there will be riots in the streets. Lindsey Graham was a JAG officer, and in order to be a JAG officer, you have to pass the bar. Was a JAG
officer. I'm sorry, he's a JAG officer? I didn't quite understand that.
Yeah, to see a lawyer head for the rat hole instead of acting like a person with a backbone. Wow, what a profile and courage, huh?
Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.,
a progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha, WAUK 540 AM, always streaming at waukradio.com. WAUK 540 AM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio, streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
Just a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class. Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today, Norfolk Southern's CEO and president, Alan Shaw, testified in front of Congress. He was there in front of the U.S. Senate. The Environment and Public Works Committee held a little shindig, and in honor of Alan Shaw's testimony, Norfolk Southern derailed another train. That's not a joke. It actually happened. Another train derailed in Alabama this time, about 37 cars derailed. None, as we know, hazardous. I guess a couple had some residual hazmat in it, but not East Palestine. Now, here's the thing. The question is, well, you know, a couple hours earlier, there was one that derailed in CSX, you know, wanted to get in on the fun and the honor, if you will. They derailed the train in West Virginia with diesel fuel and oil leaking into, one of America's oldest rivers, also part of the National Park Service. So thank you, CSX. Now, the thing is you go, was this really in honor of the testimony? Did they do this on purpose? Or is this just another day in America where we don't have, we don't have the oversight, the safety precautions, the things that we need to make sure that our trains are running safely, and we're just now paying attention of it? Because we've been told for years, rail, it's the safest way to get things. You know, the trucks are not as safe. Put things on rail, going to be much safer. And it is when you do it right. And you go, well, how do we do it right? Well, we do it right by having skilled, trained people doing their jobs, ensuring that safety is at the front of all this. And I know everyone talks about safety. Everybody who's ever worked in this environment knows safety's just safety, 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 safety. But get the job done as fast as you can. Do it faster, safely, though. Do it even faster than that, but safely, though. And you know, today, interestingly enough, I got an email from a listener who is a railroader. And he said, look, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm heading out, you know, to make my run. And we're listening to the radio chatter. And the radio chatter is, hey, there's a problem. And miraculously, oh, it must have been just a handbrake that was, you know, it wasn't bearings or wasn't brakes or there wasn't anything else. It was just something really simple. Now, he said it's a negative 10 degrees where he is. It's freaking cold. Could it be that the workers are just like, hey, you know, or could it be that the boss was like, you know, hey, just get it down the road. We're behind. We got to get going. We've got a quota to meet. And this is what happens when you have monopolies and robber barons who demand more. Their insatiable appetite for more never ends. And we see this movie over and over and over again. There's nothing new here. When you consolidate down to the point to where only a handful of companies or a handful of entities have the power to do whatever the freak they want, what you get are, well, further down the chain you are on that level of importance, the more danger you get. So if you're the worker on that job, it's going to be dangerous. But if you're the community that that work is being done in, you're probably in the worst of all situations. And this is where, again, you need government. You need informed, educated, active citizens engaging in their government to say, hey, this is what we want. And this is one of those issues. Should not be partisan. No, no. Bomb trains don't know red hat, blue hat. They didn't get that because they certainly can't do red light, green light. So this is one of those moments where we go, maybe we think about going back to the public square and hashing out our problems. And the answer to that is not right now. It's not going to happen because we seem hell-bent on returning to the good old days. The good old days of the 80s and 90s, and not the 1980s and 90s. And I point to this story of Elon Musk. Ah, Elon. Evidently, Elon is planning to build a, I don't know how quite to put this. The story reads, Elon Musk is planning to build his own town on part of the thousands of acres of newly purchased pasture and farmland outside of Texas, the Texas capital, according to deed and other land records and people familiar with the project. The idea, evidently, is a utopia, a Texas utopia along the Colorado River, where his employees can live and work and work and work. And did I mention work? Yeah, and work. And work more. Yeah, they could live and work. You know, kind of a utopia, right? and immediately my mind starts to go to funny places. Like, well, gee, what would he call it? Would it be, you know, Muskatucky? Are we, you know, Stinky Town? I don't know. Is this Muskistan? A lot of people liked Muskville. Doesn't matter what it is. Elonville? Muskatuckyistan? I don't know. But if you want to know what it's going to look like, I think we kind of have a good, I think we've already got a really good live living model. You know, an Elon Musk statue on every corner, and you're ousted if you don't pay homage. I think North Korea is kind of the place that, you know, Elonistan would look a lot like. Because you look at the fact that his Twitter impressions went down and he fired an engineer. People weren't looking at his mean tweets, so he fired someone. Can you imagine? Come with me, if you will. Can you imagine the soft ego and, because, hey, my impressions are down. People got to go. Heads will roll. Can you imagine now if your entire existence is based on this one guy? Can you imagine a world where one person controls the whole town? Can you imagine? Can you imagine such a place where they controlled your job, where they controlled the education system, where they controlled the healthcare, where they controlled all of the commerce? Can you imagine a place? Could you ever imagine such a place existing? In America, could you ever imagine a place where all of your life's decisions were decided by one guy? Who would think such a place could ever exist? Oh yeah, our history. That's right. Oops, I forgot. For my listeners in Chicago, you know Pullman Town. You know, George Pullman, you know, the Pullman car. Back in the 1894 when the Depression hit back then. He cut all, everybody's wages, he cut everybody's hours, did all kinds of draconian things to this utopia he had built. You know, company town, where, you know, you paid your rent to the company, you paid your grocery bill to the company, you paid your kids' education to the company, you paid your grocery bill, you name everything. Everything went to the Pullman. So when things got a little rough in the economy and Pullman needed a little extra cheese on his Whopper, what did he do? He took it out on the workers. And is that surprising? Of course not. We've seen it throughout history, right not far from where I live. The sweetest place on earth. It's what they build themselves, the sweetest place on earth. Hershey chocolate. Who doesn't love Hershey's chocolate? But Milton Hershey wasn't blankety blank, blank, blank. His workers once had the audacity, the year 1937, come back with me in the Wayback Machine. They had the audacity to say, we'd like better wages, hours, conditions. We'd like to be treated better. How dare they? How dare they? When they went on strike, well, they brought in thugs from New York and they gave them bats, axe handles, whatever they could grab from the Hershey planing mill. Because again, everything in the town was owned by Milton Hershey. So everything fed into this system of got to make the chocolate. All the people were dependent on the company town, their housing, their everything, everything. So when these people had the audacity to go, we want better. He was butthurt. He really was. He was pretty unhappy. Little chafe back there. And gave these thugs from New York bats to beat the living tar out of these workers. He broke the strike by breaking arms and legs. That's the history of these company towns. You know, Steinway Village in New York, another one of those perfect examples. The Steinway piano, you know, back in the 1850s was the big thing. They decided, you know, those socialists and communists, they want workers to make a living wage. Well, we're going to get away from them. We're going to move out to Astoria, Queens. We're going to move away. We're going to have our little company town so that those agitators can't come. And we can exploit labor just like we want. This isn't new, folks. Nothing new. You think about one of the first company towns. You know, 1820, you had this Francis Cabot Lowell. Goes over to England. A merchant from Boston goes over to England because he wants to learn how to do textile manufacturing. So he memorizes and steals all of their technology, because that's what we do well, and goes back and goes, hey, how can we recreate the horrible that's over there here? And it was the beginning of the town of Lowell, Massachusetts, where eventually you saw the Bread and Roses strike. But, you know, in the 1820s, you had this rise of this town, and the founders of this town were like, hey, we should go out into the rural areas and find us some youngins. Some young single women, bring them into town, make them live in these boarding houses that we own, and of course make them attend church and lead a moral life. You know, control. That sounds familiar. Let's take a look at some red states. And, you know, the bell rings, 4:30 in the morning, get your behind into the mill and work 12, 14, 16 hours a day until you die in your mid-20s and late 30s. You know, until you start spitting the brown lung from all of the dust from the looms, which led to the 1912 strike. Bread, yes, but roses too. The idea that our work should make better lives. And I could give you hundreds of examples across this country of robber barons, of the benevolent dictators in every community who said, you know, I know how to do things. The Elon Musks of their era. He's not new. You know, over the late summer, in October, we did a Working Class Heroes radio tour. We met a lot of folks on the road, and it was an amazing time. We stopped in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And again, a company town. But it was in the mining industry. And the mining industry was one of the worst. It's one of the most widely known kind of company town environments, to where you worked in the mining industry, you worked for the mine, you got your tools from the company store, you got your health care from the company doctor, you got your food from the company store, everything. In fact, you didn't even have money. So you didn't have the opportunity to go, well, I'm going to go across the street where somebody else might own a store and use money. No, you use script. So I started thinking about in Elonville, will we have to start using, you know, Tesla dollars or something? I mean, is this the future? When we give these gazillionaires the ability to create these metropolises in their image, is this where we head? Because again, it always comes with a moral compass. Always. I look at that guy who owned Domino's. I don't remember his name. I just the story. I think he started Ave Maria, Florida. Good Catholic town, Catholic university, all private, moral code. This stuff scares me, especially as you have this move by our political leaders funded by these people to break up our public schools, to break up the one thing that we the people control, and they want to put it into private hands. They want to create, and you listen to the Marjorie Trainwreck Greene and her, we need a national divorce. She's not talking about breaking up states. She's talking about segmenting off, well, little Elonvilles. And then you got to then start to wonder, when Elon gets his dream town, are you allowed to drive through it? Do you need a passport? Can you get out after dark? And security, if you live in the company town, would China be jealous of the security protocols that are in place and the behavior codes and the point systems? I mean, when I look at someone like Musk saying, and now look, Bezos has been doing the same thing. This is not new. And this is the reason I think it's important for working people to realize, we're the marks in this game. We're not part of the grand scheme. We're the marks. We're the pawns. We're the people who are going to be used and abused and misused. We're the ones who are going to show up in the factories and work to live in that factory or in that Twitter place or wherever. We're going to be the ones who are going to be doing all the dirty laundry. And our children will grow up in that environment thinking that's normal. You know, I think back to a guy that I met right when I first moved to Pennsylvania. He said when he got back from Vietnam, they had given him a bit of money. And he used that money when he got out of the service to pay off his family debt to the company store, because it was the first time in his bloodline in this country that their family wasn't in debt to this company. Now this is going back to, you know, the early 70s. The fact that kind of thing existed, and it's going to exist again, because we're not learning the history of what. And I'll tell you, the working conditions in those mines, in the looms, in these places, in the Hershey chocolate factory of the old, these were not hospitable places for working people. This was drudgery. Life was brutish and short. And for working people, that's what they want. So for me, seeing Elon go, he wants his own town, I'm not in favor of it. It's a bad idea. But I know why they're going there. So we can have our values. Want to hear your thoughts. Good idea. Should Elon be able to have his own town and enforce his narrow views? And would you move there? That's the other part. But if you needed the job, would you? Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back.
Are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, the reason I bring up Elonville or Muscatania or whatever you want to call it is because the question that becomes, what kind of a world do we as working people want to live in? Do we want to live in a world where you have the kind of outweighed power in the hands of some egomaniacal nitwit like Musk? I mean, seriously. I mean, and this is... You know, he went from everyone loved him because, you know, he was creating jobs, had a vision for the future. And I'm going, I'm leery of this guy because he's not the one creating this stuff. He's the guy hiring people who know how to do this. And look, that's great. You need people with vision. But he's turned, well, like any benevolent dictator. As long as you're kissing his behind and bowing and doing kissing the ring and as long as you're doing all that, things are rainbows and unicorns and sunshine. The second you get off that we love you kick, as soon as you start questioning, as soon as you start saying, hey, you know, maybe this isn't such a great idea. Oh, how that changes. Oh, how that turns. And speaking of rainbows and sunshine, because you had to know there was something that was going to take you from rainbows and sunshine to rainbows and sunshine. Tennessee Lieutenant Governor Randy McNally. Ah, Randy McNally. Evidently, he has an official Instagram account. And evidently, on that official Instagram account, the lieutenant governor, the Republican lieutenant governor of Tennessee, a state that is banning drag shows and passing all kinds of anti-LGBTQ stuff and all, you know, all this because we need to protect the children. Evidently, he has repeatedly commented on the nearly naked photos of a 20-year-old gay man. Who is, you know, again, you know, almost naked, and one of them, you know, hearts emojis, fire emojis, and I guess on one said, you could turn a rainy day into rainbows and sunshine. now here's the thing. This person who posted these photos is 20 years old. So he's not a child, so you can go, well, he's just a consenting adults. And look, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with consenting adults. But don't be a freaking hypocrite about it. And this is, again, my problem with Elonistan. Here's the thing. How many kids does Elon have with workers that he used to work for his company, like a gazillion? How many times have you seen, oh, well, you know, we don't even know how many kids are out there of former workers. You go back to the Lowell, Massachusetts story. The fact that, you know, you had the founders going out into the poor areas and bringing these young, attractive women or men, if that's your direction, into the fold because, you know, we care about their moral compass and their moral values. Moreover, they want to corrupt them. This reeks of all of that. And for me, it's the hypocrisy. Look, you know, I'm a believer of, you know, do your own thing. And I have been my whole life. Or as my daughter says, you do you. I may not agree with what you do, and I don't have to. I may not like what you do. Doesn't matter. As long as I don't have to do it, great. But we do have to somehow be respectful of each other. Because, look, I'm sure that there are things that I do that people aren't thrilled with. You should look at my email inbox. And again, all hateful emails go right to the top. I think I have that written in code, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So please, those right to the top. But it's this hypocrisy. We're going to point our finger at somebody and say, you're something wrong with you. While simultaneously, very quietly, and I don't know, does this guy think that no one, he's the lieutenant freaking governor. Does he think nobody is paying attention to him putting heart emojis and fire emojis on a gay man's naked, nearly naked pictures and saying, you could turn my rainy day into rainbows and sunshine? Really? Wow. I'm going to go with wow.
WAUK 540 AM. Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. Actor Robert Blake has died at 89. As a child, he appeared in the Our Gang TV series, then the movie In Cold Blood, eventually moving on to the detective TV show Beretta. In real life, he was charged with killing his second wife, Bonnie Lee Bakley, but a jury found him not guilty in 2005. Norfolk Southern CEO Alan Shaw was on the hot seat testifying before a Senate committee following three high-profile incidents, including last month's derailment and fire in East Palestine, Ohio. Shaw promising...
Senator, I'm committed to doing what's right. You know, we're going to be there today, tomorrow, a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now.
California braces for more bad weather. CBS's Carter Evans in Truckee.
The big concern now at the lower elevations where we're going to get all this rain and where we do have snow right now that's going to get a lot of rain, and that could turn into a lot of flooding.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Van Nair. Here's what you need to know. A winter storm watch, now a winter storm warning in effect for Kenosha, Milwaukee, Ozaukee, Racine, Sheboygan, Washington, and Waukesha counties beginning at 6 p.m. until 10 a.m. Friday, with 6 to 8 inches of snow and possibly even more for counties along Lake Michigan. And a winter storm watch also begins at 6 p.m. until 9 a.m. Friday for Dodge, Fond du Lac, Jefferson, and Walworth counties, with 4 to 6 inches of potential snow. Winds gusting up to 35 miles an hour can impact visibility. Travel expected to be especially hazardous during the Friday morning commute. Linen Kugel celebrating International Women's Day Wednesday by releasing a new beer, Roses Goza. The brew, made with cherries from Door County and pink Himalayan sea salt, Roses Goza will be available in the Liney's tap room until it runs out. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
Direct from the Dairy State, it's Extra Sharp Weekends, a three-hour block of Wisconsin-produced radio, Saturdays and Sundays from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m., featuring Raised in Wisco with Joe Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, The Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens, and Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown. Enjoy it by the slice or enjoy the whole darn block. Extra Sharp Weekends is radio so fresh, it squeaks. Listen in on the Civic Media Station or on the app.
This is Hammer, mortgage originator with Provisor. Get your financing game on before you jump into the open house market. Join me at Weichert Realtors Lake Point 8 to 10 every Saturday and Sunday morning in March. Enjoy donuts from Zippy Lube, coffee from Forward Craft and Coffee, and let's talk financing strategy. It's an open house tailgate party at Weichert Lake Point 2045 Atwood Avenue. Visit MadisonOpenHouse.com for more info. Provisor Inc., NMLS ID 1802853, Equal Housing Lender.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
Up North News Radio is Wisconsin's new choice for progressive talk about important state issues, from the team that brings you the news through social media, newsletters, and here on the radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m.
People like themselves.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, this is, one of those things that never ceases to amaze me. We didn't learn from Sarah Palin, evidently. Remember when Sarah Palin was big on the abstinence-only thing? You know, we shouldn't be teaching sex ed at all in schools. It's bad. You know, it's abstinence only. And then her kids went out and pumped out, a bunch of units, proving that, abstinence only works so well. Now we have the new Sarah Palin, new and somehow dumber. Lauren Boebert evidently is going to be a grandma at 36. Yeah, evidently her 17-year-old son knocked up his girlfriend. And she let this news out after she had ranted about how we should end comprehensive sex education in schools. Yeah, she did that. Here to share some thoughts on, could it get any worse? Could it get any dumber? Our good friend Sarah Burris, reporter at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
That's how I know that if there's a God, that she's got a sense of humor.
No, this is one right? of those things. I guess.
Because really, there is no good reason to just sort of smack somebody down that quickly. Can you imagine like her son just being like, mom, you may not want to say that publicly because turns out my girlfriend's preggers. PG, like she's not in a movie. So yeah, but it's interesting that there are lots and lots and lots of statistics about this, about abstinence only being the worst thing for schools. Even whenever it comes to there was that whole purity ball thing where kids danced with their dads and pledged to be married to them until they handed them over or something.
A little creepy.
And wore rings, right? And it was like a really big thing. Abstinence only pledges basically delayed sexual activity for like 6 months, I think is what they found on average.
I was going to say 6 minutes would have been. Yeah. Okay. It was 6 months. Yeah.
Right. My favorite thing in the world was in Kansas. This was years and years ago. A friend of mine was working for a women's PAC, and she managed to convince a Republican female to carry a bill that was called Abstinence Plus. And it was everything but.
No, in that vein, Abstinence Plus. So as I was looking at this story today, because it gave a great opportunity as I was sitting there with my 16-year-old son to go, look at this moron.
Wrap it up.
Look at this moron. Here's what I'm saying you. Don't do it. Don't do it. But if you do, put a hat on your Jimmy. But don't do it being the first part. You're not ready. You're not financially ready. You're not, physically ready. You're not emotionally ready. You're not ready. Don't do it. But if you do, put a hat on your Jimmy. How hard is that?
I mean, my comment has been, hey, there's a
I shouldn't have asked it
box,
that way. How right? difficult is that?
Hell, narf. There's a value pack under the sink, right?
And like, I did. I gave it. Absolutely. I gave him that already.
We like variety in this house. I've been telling my cousins, both of which can't even drive yet. I'm just like, look. I'm not saying you have to like abstain or whatever. If you need a condom, you let me know. I will send them to you via Amazon. Nobody will know. You're good. Because it's like, the sad thing is everybody's like, if you're not mature enough to buy your own condoms, then you're not mature enough to have sex. And it's like, oh, I wish that was the case. Yeah. I wish that's how that works. But
that's said by dumb people who knock somebody up at 17 or 16 or 17. Look at Bobo.
Right. And the thing is, it's like, yes, the pregnancy thing is a big deal, but like we're talking about AIDS. Like we're talking about, HPV, which leads to cervical cancer. Like this is not just about being saddled with, somebody on your hip for 18 years. This is also death.
Yeah, that went south. That
right.
Was funny
sorry.
For a second,
so sorry.
And now you just, that was a downer.
I know.
Now I did. I do think the kid, her kid did, slap her where she belonged. because, you know, she said, you know, something along the lines, you made me a grandmother at 16. And the kid goes, yeah, like you did to your mother.
Oh, well played. Bravo.
Yeah, bravo. You know,
these are the values that we learn from our parents.
Let's hope stupidity obviously is hereditary. Let's hope bad parenting isn't. Let's move along. Some news on the Trump front. Possible indictment. We've been talking about possible indictments for like 6 years now. Are we any closer to possible indictments?
Well, what's different today is the New York Times story that they posted basically got a leak from somebody in the New York DA's office that's saying, you know, here are the charges we're looking at. And some of these, just based on what some of the legal nerds have been saying, and that was the last story of the night that I posted, was just sort of following up some people who actually know what this stuff is. Some of the legal nerds are like, yeah, this one's a little stupid, but there's like five other charges in here that's going to stick. So there's like some election fraud, whatnot. And they're just like, okay, that's a little silly. But when you're talking about like campaign finance fraud and falsification of business records and like stuff like that, like there really is a paper trail for that. That's what Michael Cohen basically just said. Here's a giant box of all of the evidence you need. And let's talk about this 19 times. So, you know. They've got the goods. They've got the receipts.
I'm going to make the prediction he never sees the inside of a jail cell. Never.
Maybe not. It may be just a hefty fine. But if that's if he's accused of a felony, then again, like, doesn't that preclude him from
not
serving?
Accused. He can still run if he's accused.
Well, if he's convicted of a felony.
No, if he's convicted, do you think that's going to happen before 2024 with the amount of lawyers that he can afford to postpone and delay and paper people with? Everyone keeps saying, oh, he's not going to be able to run. He's going to run. He's going to be able to run because our legal system is fraught with ability to delay and stall and push off. I look at Eric Holder. They wanted Eric Holder to testify. They subpoenaed him in front of Congress. Mm-hmm. 7 years later, he still didn't do it. We have the rich people and the elites have a way to get away with stuff that the rest of us don't. I see he doesn't see the inside of a courtroom before the election, and he's probably convicted at some point, but he's never going to see the inside of it.
The thing about Eric Holder is he was in office.
Yeah.
When you're no longer in office.
It was a long process.
Didn't care about that after that.
I know. But he still.
They were just like.
Did he testify?
But they weren't going after him after that. That's when Democrats took over. And nobody was going to ask Eric Holder to come talk to him about, you know, whatever right-wing conspiracy at the time. What is different in this case is that there are not a ton of ways that Trump could delay this for 2 years. I mean, there's not a lot. Unless they want to, I mean, if they want to try for these state charges, there might be some stuff they can delay on that. But it's like they don't need anything from him. They've got all the goods. They don't need, I don't know. I think it takes less than a year.
Well, we'll see. I hope so. I hope. I like in every one of these schemes that have come up over the last several years with Trump, Mueller's coming. Mueller's not coming. Yeah, he's coming. He's in the rearview mirror. He's not coming. I had a guy come on off and he was telling me Trump's going to resign any day now. He's never resigning. And every one of these, we're going to build up our hopes, and it doesn't happen. I'm saying probably not going to happen, but we'll see.
I'm an optimist. Now, Fannie Willis, now Fulton County, I think is going to take a bit. That's going to take a minute.
Yeah. No, he's going to have a lot of legal fronts. I still think it's not going to be enough to stop him from running. We'll see. I hope. But here's the thing. I don't want him to be stopped from running. I want him to get thrashed at the polls so we can be done with this. And the reason I think that could happen is I look at this story that just came out that evidently Fox Corporation, I don't know if you saw this, they're looking to acquire all of the rights to The Apprentice.
Yes.
I'm going, this is how Fox blackmails Trump.
Yes. In so many ways, right? Like, that's the thing that's crazy. I didn't know that these were up for grabs. That's what's interesting to me, because if we're talking about a news organization that's angling for these videos,
right?
I guarantee you Jeff Bezos got more money. And he is probably willing to just dump a whole lot of it just to mess with Donald Trump. I mean, that right? That's like a good weekend for Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, I mean, or maybe, you know, maybe Musk will jump into the middle of it so he can hide it or who knows what.
Maybe, or- yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's that's the kind of thing where that's what what's his name? Some of the people that were on it have said that's where Donald Trump's secrets are, where he starts, you know, wiping the N-word all over everybody and, you know, saying some really vile stuff. And all of that was taped. Like, it's not just they're taping the show that they're putting on. Like, the cameras roll at all times because it's technically required to as a game show.
Right. No, because look, you know, we need blooper reels.
Yeah. Well, there's that too.
We need white supremacist blooper reels. Which, were you surprised that none of the folks in the House voted against the resolution on supporting white supremacists? 26 Republicans refused to sign on to something that says we're not white supremacists.
It is just like the stupidest thing, but it was the easiest win. I mean, Democrats literally said, y'all are having a really bad week. It looks like you chose the worst possible week to whip out your Fox, your January 6th videos, which you're relitigating in the same week that Dominion is proving that Fox is a bunch of liars. Here's a win for you. Here's something really easy. And they're like, oh, no. We're good. We don't want to offend our racists. There are people.
Yeah, there are people. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Sarah Burris. Sarah's a reporter at Raw Story, rawstory.com, if you want to take a look at the work that she does there. I want to go back to Fox for a minute, because evidently Liz Cheney had some tweeting to do. Lay it out for us.
So that's the thing, right? All of this stuff that's going on with Republicans who are bringing up January 6th. You know, we don't know why McCarthy handed everything over to Tucker Carlson. Some people are saying that Tucker Carlson, like, helped him get elected as speaker, and that's why. I think, personally, he made a deal with somebody in the right-wing caucus that he had to turn over all of that footage to Fox. Like, I think somebody made that deal on Tucker's behalf. But it's, I'm like, this kind of stuff is the, you know, it's the pinnacle of Republican lying and Fox News' irrational way of rewriting history. Representative Dan Goldman had the best characterization of the footage that Tucker's been playing this week. And it was the idea of saying, you know, showing footage of the Twin Towers early in the morning on 9/11 before anything hit it and saying, well, you know, September 11th was mostly peaceful.
Yeah.
It's the exact same thing. It's showing footage after and before and things that didn't, you know, where all of the selective places where nobody was in the Capitol for like 5 seconds and claiming, well, clearly this is a false flag.
Yeah, clearly. You know, Bill O'Reilly was a great guy before the falafels and the loofah sponges.
Exactly. This is, it's so frustrating. But, you know, that's the point that Liz Cheney was making. She's like, really, you want to talk about this again? Like, we spent a whole year talking about this. And one of the top issues that voters identified, one of the main reasons that a lot of Republicans switched over to vote for Democrats, is because of this idea that, oh, crap, our democracy is at stake. They really agreed with that sentiment that was being pushed by Democratic candidates, even if they you know, weren't Democrats themselves. And so Liz Cheney's comment is, bring it on. Like, let's talk about this again. In fact, let's talk about it until November 24.
Yeah, no, I think this is, you know, strategic on both sides. I think McCarthy kept people out of the committee hearing because he didn't want to have to defend Trump and all of this stuff. And then knew that, you know, we have the attention span of gnats and the memory to match. And that eventually down the road, this narrative was going to be flipped. And all of this stuff was going to play out into, oh, they're fine people on both sides. And I truly believe that was the calculus at the time, to not put people on there. And also so that, you know, Scott Perry and the rest of them and Boebert wouldn't be on the panel and someone just turned to them and go, what were you doing on that day? Kind of a shield.
Right. There's that piece of it. I think McCarthy legitimately thought that if they didn't respond, that nobody would pay attention. I think he undercalculated what would actually happen. And nobody, I think even the panel, the January 6th committee didn't really know what kind of ratings they were going to get. And it just exploded.
Yeah. And I say that was because of Liz Cheney. I go, look, as Republicans understand that medium far better than any of the Democrats. If there's a blooper reel behind the scenes of the January 6th committee, it's her controlling all of the movements.
It's her being the puppet master.
I truly believe that. I believe she's the one who orchestrated all of that stuff. I don't think Democrats are that smart.
We have actually heard that the reason that they hired somebody to be the producer of all of these videos was because of Liz Cheney. I mean, that she mandated that there be a professional person who could basically set this whole thing in motion so that it would look as good as it did to the public. But I mean, it's when I think about, you know, I always compare every political issue to my parents because they're Republicans, my dad, very conservative. And he was done after January 6th. We sat here and watched that footage with our mouths hanging open. And he was like, no, I'm done. And he has continued to be done. He still talks about that moment, like coming to that realization and how disgusted he was with Donald Trump for all of this. And I think people, the people who had that moment, I don't think you get rid of that. I really don't. I think that was big for a lot of people who were, you know, willing to pull the lever for Trump, you know, in 20, but are never going to be willing to do it again.
Yeah, but it was still a lot closer than a lot of us would have preferred, especially in states like mine in Pennsylvania. So again, you know, there are some people like your father, but sadly, most people are in their camps. And, you know, did you ever see the movie A Face in a Crowd?
Yes.
The Andy Griffith movie. I mean, this is that kind of moment. And I talked about this yesterday where, you know, you find out who these people are, who Tucker Carlson and Hannity and the rest of them are. And in the past, we used to turn away from them. Now, this generation of people have doubled down on defending them because, well, they believe what we believe because they've told us what to believe.
And it's sad. Like, the thing that's been really tragic about all of this is that, you know, I've got family members who are avid Fox News watchers, and these people are basically trashing their own viewers. And it's like, man, you made my family members hate me for what I believe.
Yep.
And all of it was a lie. And so it's kind of become personal in a lot of ways.
No.
And I hope that more people have that sort of reaction or realization for the family members they've lost to the right-wing nutters.
I hope so as well, and I hope there's some way to come back from it. I just don't know. Lastly, I want to get your thoughts on the Supreme Court asking for more funding to beef up security. Maybe if you stop making really bad decisions.
Just a thought. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of like accusing the victim of wearing a skirt that's too short. But maybe that's the solution for Brett Kavanaugh, is he should just dress and drag and then no one will recognize him. That is my suggestion.
So am I getting this right? Am I hearing Sarah Burris saying, well, they were asking for it.
Right. No.
Okay.
So it can't.
All right.
It can't be that.
It can't be that.
But at the same time, members of Congress deal with this every single day.
Right.
Like, there are so many members of Congress that have security that they have to pay for themselves or out of their campaign funds. I mean, grow a pair.
It's not that I'm advocating for it. It's not that I condone it. But like Chris Rock's video, I understand.
Yeah.
There you go. Sarah, appreciate the time. As always, great stuff.
Thanks so much. Have a good weekend.
Our good friend Sarah Burris. Make sure you check out her work over at Raw Story. RawStory.com is the website. You can find out the incredible work she does. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1911. That was the day that coal miners in Westmoreland County, Pennsylvania, walked out of the mines. It became known as the Slovak Strike because 70% of the strikers were Slovakian immigrants. Unrest was mounting among workers in the non-unionized coal fields. Tens of thousands of miners were signing up to be members of the United Mine Workers of America. And the union was winning improved working conditions and wages for their members, including the eight-hour day. But the Westmoreland miners were not unionized. They still had to work 10-hour days. Then the Keystone Coal Company required the miners to use new safety lights and explosives. The miners had to pay for these items out of their own pockets. Outraged, the miners met to formulate a response. 400 men joined up to a new UMWA local. The company cracked down immediately. They fired 100 men who had attended the meeting. Some were long-term employees who had worked for more than two decades in the mines. The miners walked off the job to protest the firings. Soon, the strike spread beyond the Keystone Coal Company. Miners joined the strike from 65 mines belonging to 30 companies. The mining companies responded with every tactic in their arsenals. They evicted the miners from their company homes. They won injunctions against picketing. They recruited recent immigrants from Eastern Europe as scabs. They paid off police who responded brutally to the strikers. 16 miners were killed. Although the strikers held out for 16 months, the strike ended in defeat, with many of the strikers being blacklisted from future work in the coal fields. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So during the break, I was telling Sarah that a friend of the show, comedian Steve Hofstetter, was in Tennessee. In fact, you know, Steve's been on the show a number of times. Did his comedy show in a dress, and of course, you knew it was coming. Sarah's like, "Well, you should wear a dress." I'm going, "I'm never wearing a dress. There aren't dresses big enough." Omar is gone. But, you know, this idea that, you know, as a matter of protest, and look, I would love to do that. I would love to, you know, if there was a way to not wear the dress by looking like, great. But it's incredible to me that we're in a moment where we've got to be talking about this kind of stuff in protest, that people can't just be whoever they're going to be. And the thing that gets me is we've got so many bigger problems. You know, in these states that are pursuing these kind of draconian, moral compass laws, these are states that have high poverty rates, high childhood poverty rates. You know, all of the negatives you can have in a society are elevated and all of the positives are negative. And yet somehow we're going to fix it all if we just, you know, this. It's really very twisted. And I fear where I started today, I fear we see this breaking up of the country, this continual, you know, breaking apart into our little silos of that understand benefits just the handful. The wealthy do very, very well. And as we move to more of the Elon Muskistans, we lose power. And the more divided we are, we lose power. The one thing the wealthy understand is while they have all the money, we've out-procreated them. If we ever did figure out how to get on the same page, if we ever did find common ground and things that were important, again, they would be, well, they would be on the menu instead. And we were there once. There was a period where working people figured it out. It was after the last depression. And there's part of me goes, maybe that's where we have to get. Because we're so easily divided by nonsense. I mean, really. I mean, this whole drag thing, absolute nonsense. Utter nonsense. And yet it has dominated our discussions. It has dominated policymaking. Critical race theory is destroying education. I just know it. Well, define it for me. I don't know what it is, but I know it's bad. You know, how many of those videos do I have to see before we realize that we're not talking to each other anymore? We all want the same things, I believe. Good schools for our kids, safe neighborhoods, good jobs that pay good wages, opportunity for the future. but yet we get divided on nonsense, utter nonsense, while they are robbing us blind. I go back to my grandparents' generation, the greatest generation. They were able to come together and put their, many of their differences aside, and they got policies that enriched the working class like no other point, at no other point in history. And they did that by standing together on issues that they agreed on. You know, like a decent living wage for working people, health care, fighting for retirement security. I wonder if we'll get back to that. Or if it's just more entertaining to worry about what somebody who we don't know is doing somewhere we know they're doing.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.